My name is Bo Brindley, and I represent the defendant appellant Tyrone Kirkland. Mr. Kirkland was convicted after a jury trial and now appeals the elements instruction, given the accuracy of that instruction, on the aiding and abetting and 924C charge, as well as an appeal based on the currently pending case of Elaine, which is in the Supreme Court of the United States. In its response, the government talks about the issue of waiver and whether Mr. Kirkland waived the objection and the issue that we've now raised regarding an error with respect to the elements instruction. This court has long recognized in the cases cited in our reply brief that a waiver is an intentional relinquishment of a known right. Failures to object that result from inadvertent errors or accidental blunders or negligent omissions, different phrases meaning essentially the same thing that this court has used, cannot constitute waiver. Each case cited by the government in support of the waiver involves situations where the specific instruction or instructions are being challenged were directly addressed by defense counsel, and there was an affirmative either agreement that they liked the instruction or an affirmative assertion of no objection to that instruction. Now, that didn't happen here. In this case, when prompted on whether he had any objections, after there was an off-the-record jury instruction conference, so we don't have any insight into what was discussed there, all that counsel said there was that none that I can think of. Now, that
so,
is not.
So doesn't that mean that counsel approved the final instructions on the record before they were read to the jury?
It means that he couldn't think of any instruction, any objections at that time. Now, I don't know if that means that whether he had had some sort of disagreement during the off-the-record conference or not. That we don't know. But
well, that certainly should have spoken up at that moment. And if there were, if he thought there might be potential objections, said something to the court at that point, that was his chance, right?
It certainly would have been better had he done that, Judge. But that's not the unequivocal agreement to the specific challenged instruction that gives rise to an intentional relinquishment of a known right. And I direct the
so
court.
So the district judge should tick down each of the instructions and say, do you agree with this instruction? Do you agree with this instruction? And so forth, just to make that record.
Normally, I don't mean to interrupt, Judge.
Right.
Normally, during a jury instruction conference that's done, that's what happens. We go through them. Mm-hmm. Instruction one, objection or no objection. We didn't get that here. And the burden is on proof is on the government to prove waiver.
So was that what happened? I understand. Is there any record of what happened on the off-the-record conference? And
no.
Is there any, do we know, is this the common practice of this particular judge to do the jury instruction conference off the record?
I don't know, Your Honor, whether Judge Kennelly always does it this way or why it was done this way in this case. All that I know is that because of that, it complicates our ability to know what happened, and that cuts against the government who has a burden on waiver. As this court has stated, any doubts regarding the issue have to be resolved against a finding of waiver.
Well, go ahead.
We do know that the judge made it clear to defense counsel that the time had come to make any objections to any instructions that he wanted to make, and he had none. So that's
he said,
pretty clear.
He said that he couldn't think of any, and I think that leaves the door open for both negligent omission or inadvertent error, and certainly that was the case in Hamilton, into which
so,
we cited.
So then the judge should say, if you can't think of any, okay, counsel, we'll recess so we can see if you can think of some.
No, Your Honor.
So at what point does the rubber hit the road or whatever that is? Is it over? I mean, the district court should be able to say any objections. If you don't have any, you forever hold your peace, or you say, I can't think of any, and so that is the end of story.
I think that would give rise to forfeiture rather than waiver. I mean, waiver is the intentional relinquishment of a known right, and in Hamilton, which we cited in our reply, this court said that counsel said no objection affirmatively, not just I can't think of any, no objection. It was found to be an inadvertent error.
So the clever lawyer says I can't think of any right now, instead of no objection.
I think the clever lawyer says objection, Judge. But when in a situation like this, in order to have a finding of intentional relinquishment of known right, I think you need more than was done here. And that's what happened in the Hamilton case. That's what happened in the Haddad case. Both of those cases were in Haddad, the defense counsel actually agreed with the instruction, which was obviously wrong, And this court said, well, that has to be an inadvertent mistake.
Well, here the lawyer didn't even object when the jury asked the question on count two, didn't make an objection to the instruction then, right?
What he said then was that he agreed with the judge's position that the instruction that was received on count two was instruction 21. And he said that he agreed with that, and that really can't be read to be more, in my view, than simply agreeing that's where you find out about count two in these instructions. It's number 21, and he didn't think that there was anything more the court was going to do at that time. I don't know whether during the jury instruction conference something else had happened. Judge Kennelly, at the time that he answered the jury question, said, well, as I discussed with the lawyers before, and he made a comment about his view of the question. I don't know if that was something relating back to the jury instruction conference or if it's something related to an off-the-record discussion before the question. But all of that, I think, ultimately cuts in against a finding of waiver in this case. I don't think you can find waiver in this case if it wasn't found in Hamilton and Haddad.
In terms of the pattern jury instruction, the one you want now, or you say the district court should have given,
yes,
what is an instruction that came out in 2012 and the case was tried in 2011?
That's true, Your Honor, but the law underlying the instructions that were given has not changed. The jury instruction, the new pattern instruction, which is advised to be given now and is being given now, that is based on law that existed at the time that this case went to trial. It has always been settled law, and we've cited these cases, that to be guilty of aiding and abetting a Section 924C offense, a defendant must intentionally facilitate the firearm use or carrying. And in this case, they weren't told that. They weren't told intentionality was a part of this at all. They were told it would be enough if he knowingly aided, but they weren't given a definition of what aid means. And the real problem was the second sentence of the instruction. I'll just read the instruction they were given on the third element. They were told that the government must prove defendant knowingly aided, counseled, induced, or procured use or carrying of a firearm during and in relation to the bank robbery. The government must prove that the defendant knowingly participated in the criminal activity and tried to make it succeed. The big problem here is that second sentence suggests they could be talking about the bank robbery that's at the end of the first sentence rather than the knowing aiding. And knowingly aiding,
but here,
that may not be an intentional act.
But here the only evidence the jury had was that he planned the bank robbery, he produced the guns, and provided the guns to them. So what else could the jury find?
Well, they had evidence from the informant only that he provided them with the guns. The difference between, and this sort of goes to what we were arguing.
They must have believed the informant, or he would have been found not guilty.
I don't agree with you on that, Your Honor, for one reason, because with respect to the bank robbery part of this, there was all kinds of corroboration. And we go through that in the reply brief. See, the informant testified, well, they're at these various locations.
Sure, the cell phone.
The cell phone.
Yeah,
all of that corroborated.
Where she said he was.
Right. All of that corroborated the testimony regarding the bank robbery. And there's phone calls that were made. There's a bunch of things that are argued by the government. There is no corroboration for what she said about the firearms. And the jury's question here about that was asked, I think, suggests they were confused about that very issue that's at stake in this instruction. Whether he's charged with simply with supplying the firearms or with a bank robbery where firearms were used. And I think that suggests they were confused about it. I think reasonable jurors could disagree about the elements after reading this instruction.
Now, let me just ask you about the case that's pending before the Supreme Court, that Alain case. How would a favorable decision in that case help you in light of the fact that there was plenty of evidence of brandishing firearms during the robbery in this case?
Generally speaking, and it was cited by Justice Thomas in his Harris dissent, when you have one of these where 924C offenses where it's use that the judge is dealing with, the sentence is always essentially automatically 5 years. When it's brandishing, the sentence is 7 years. The way that this is going to help Mr. Kirkland is it's going to put him in a position where the judge is going to have to give him or could give him the 5-year minimum rather than the 7. And we don't know what Judge Kennelly would do when confronted with that. We need to find out. That's the important thing, Your Honor.
Right. You want to save the rest of your time?
I do. Whatever's remaining.
All righty. Mr. Laud.
Good morning. May it please the Court. Raj Lad on behalf of the United States. Your Honors, the instruction given by the district court here on the 924C charge correctly communicated to the jury the requirements for that charge, that the defendant knowingly aid, procure, counsel in some way, encourage and help forward the use of a firearm in this offense. There was no objection after the jury instruction conference, and when the jury raised this through a question, the defense counsel actually agreed that he didn't want any further instruction on that issue. And it may well be because of this issue about whether or not the defendant brought the guns. That's certainly not the only way the defendant could have been guilty of the 924C charge. The evidence was that he planned this robbery and that his plan called for using the guns to intimidate the bank manager who could open the bank vault, which is what the robbers inside the bank did in fact do. And the defense focused on the lack of evidence other than from the cooperator about where the guns came from. So it may well be that trial counsel felt that the better approach was to not explicitly answer the jury's questions and simply direct them back to the jury instruction, which, while it's been replaced by a new pattern instruction that may well be a better instruction, did communicate the elements of the offense. So for that reason, I don't think there's any error here, plain or otherwise, putting to one side the potential waiver.
Well, it showed that the jury verdict shows he used and carried the firearm.
Yes, it does.
Does it show it? Did he brandished it?
I believe it does, Your Honor, for two reasons. The first is the only purpose for the firearm's use in this offense and the testimony of the cooperator as to why firearms were brought was so that they would be brandished during the robbery. I mean, the purpose was to intimidate the people inside of the bank to let them into the bank vault. And then separately, the fact of brandishment is just indisputable. It's on the videotape that the jury saw, that the judge saw. So, you know, it seems impossible that the jury would have convicted the defendant on the 924C charge, which they did, without finding brandishment.
The tape does show the gun in display.
Yeah,
within the bank.
Yes, Your Honor, there were actually three guns, and it's not an instance where it's in a waistband or something and just being briefly displayed. They're being held out with the arms out and the guns clearly visible. So,
and Jones, let me make sure I have the factual record straight. Jones actually had a gun in each of her hands when she was in the lobby, correct?
That's correct, Your Honor. The defendant instructed Jones that the larger gun, the Tech 9, didn't work, but that it would intimidate the people inside of the bank. And then he stated that the revolver could be fired inside of the bank because it wouldn't leave any shell casings behind.
Now, let me ask you about this Elaine case. In your view of it, would Kirkland be entitled to resentencing if the Supreme Court overrules Harris in Elaine?
I don't believe so, Your Honor, because we would be reviewing for plain error. There was no objection at trial. And as we were just discussing, the evidence of the fact of brandishment is overwhelming here. That said, after Elaine is decided, if this court needs further, if this court has not yet ruled and needs further briefing on the issue, the government would be happy to provide that. But it seems that to convict of the 924C charge in this case, the jury would have had to have found brandishment. So even though there's not an explicit jury finding on that, there'd be no prejudice to the defendant because of the lack of that finding, even if the Supreme Court did reverse course in Elaine.
This process that Judge Cannella used, having an informal off-the-record conference followed by the formal stating of objections, do you run into that with other judges or with Judge Cannella in other cases?
I have had two trials before Judge Cannella, and I believe in both circumstances there was an informal conference. I know that,
Is it made clear that what's said off the record doesn't count? That it has to be, that the objections have to be formally stated on the record?
Well, I suppose that would be off the record. But if you'd like, I mean, I can just briefly state that he does invite counsel on the record, as is the case in this instance, to put any objections that they have on the record. And in fact, the defense attorney here did request on the record two specific instructions that presumably were discussed off the record at the informal jury instruction conference. So he certainly knew that things that he wanted,
he needed to put on the record and did, in fact, do that with those two instructions.
Is this a practice in the Northern District, the off-the-record conference? I don't know how many trials you've had, but to take it further, is this a pretty routine thing to do it off the record and then put things on the record?
Certainly not every judge does it, but it did not strike me as unusual at the time.
We have warned on repeated occasions about the dangers of doing it that way, haven't we? It's a slow case.
Yes, Your Honor, and I think that obviously here it would be cleaner if there was a record of the jury instruction conference. But
government never asked for a record, though. Didn't say, Your Honor, you know, this should be on a record. You didn't ask for it to be on a record.
No, Your Honor.
But your government's obligation is to protect the record.
Yes, Your Honor.
So you could have done a better job.
Certainly, Your Honor.
So there's no policy in the U.S. Attorney's Office to make that request. Can I glean that since you didn't ask? I assume there's no policy.
Certainly not a policy that I'm aware of.
So the U.S. Attorney's Office is taking with a grain of salt what we've said in earlier cases, too, just like the district judges.
Your Honor, I have to confess I'm not sure it's the result of as much contemplation as it should have been, and I think it's something that we need to think deliberately about as an office and address.
Mm-hmm. That's fair enough.
Any other questions? All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
How much time? 1 minute?
Regarding the Elaine issue, if Elaine is reversed, to be clear, the minimum sentence will be different. And Judge Cannelli, we don't know whether he would give him a different sentence if the minimum wasn't requiring 7 rather than 5. And so I do think it's going to need to be remanded, and we will provide any additional briefing the court requires.
What? I'm sorry. I'm not following. The fact of the matter is everybody saw him brandish the gun, apparently, right?
They saw other people brandishing the gun, not him. He wasn't in the bank.
The woman who had the gun.
Yes.
Okay.
But the question is whether or not Judge Cannelli felt bound to give him the 7 years because it was minimum and mandatory, rather than the 5 would be minimum mandatory if it's reversed. Judge Cannelli has to make that decision. I don't know how he'll make it. He didn't indicate at the sentencing anything to tell us. That's why I think it should be remanded. Regarding the conference, oftentimes what happens is you do have an informal conference, but then in your formal conference, you still go through them one by one, knowing where the issues are. That's what didn't happen here.
Double the time, though. My practice, I was on the district court. I always put it on the record, but we didn't do double because you're now suggesting a process of you do it off the record. Then you have to still go on the record and object to each one. So it's really cleaner and more direct to just do the conference on the record. Everybody makes their objections. Nobody has to remember what they objected to.
I think that would be better. Some judges do it the other way where they go through both informally and formally.
Informally. Do
yes.
both.
I think the instruction was incomplete as it didn't inform regarding the proper state of mind, intentionality, and I don't think there can be a waiver, Your Honor.
All right. Thank you.
We ask to have the case reversed and
remanded. And were you appointed?
I was appointed for Mr. Kirkland, yes.
Yeah, well, we thank you for the effort and the time and energy you've put in, and as always, we thank the government for their fine representation. Case will be taken under advisement.
Thank you.